Years ago, 1999, if you want to actually put a date on it, Scott McNeely, the then CEO of the then big deal tech company Sun Microsystems, said about consumers, "You have zero privacy. Get over it." That's a quote. Not only did we not get over it, going on 25 years later now, consumer privacy is arguably the defining challenge of how we live with the new tools of technology, specifically for us right now, facial recognition. I mention that because there's a new book out from Kashmir Hill. She covers technology at the New York Times. Her book is called Your Face Belongs to Us. Kashmir Hill, welcome to the program. It is great to have you back.
Thanks for having me on, Kai.
I want to start not with the title of this book, but with the subtitle, which in my experience sometimes reveals more than the actual title does. So the book is called Your Face Belongs to Us, as I said, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It. Would you explain for us, please, what this secretive startup is? And then I've got one more question about that.
Yes. So I heard about this company a few years ago. I got a kind of crazy tip and I first was skeptical. I didn't think it could be true. It was this company, Clearview AI, that claimed to have scraped billions of photos from the public internet without people's consent to build a database of something like a billion photos. And it was selling a facial recognition app to police that it said could identify somebody with something like 99% accuracy, take a photo of their face, and it pulls up any place on the internet where it's appeared.
So a couple of things now that you've given me that answer. Number one, you said 2019, which is 4 years ago, which is forever ago. So this company's been around for a while now.
Yes. And their database now has 30 billion faces.
30 billion faces. Okay. All right. So the actual follow up I was going to ask, this company is called Clearview AI. It's not Facebook. It's not Google. It's not the biggies that I would have thought. How is it that this small, never heard of almost until you started writing about it in The New York Times company has such oomph now?
Yeah. You know, one thing that I found that surprised me was that Facebook and Google had both actually developed this very technology internally. They both created apps that you could take a photo of somebody or even point a phone at them in the real world and find out their name. And both companies said, wow, this seems like it seems too dangerous to release. We don't want to be the ones to put that out there. And so what Clearview AI did wasn't so much a technological breakthrough as an ethical one.
Sorry, I know that's not a question. It's just more of a response, but wow. Well, so actually along those lines, tell us, please, what happened when Clearview found out you started asking around about them, because they reacted.
Right. So when I first heard about them, I started trying to find any information I could about them to find out if what they were selling was real. And there was very little available on the internet. I started trying to find people connected to the company, including a lawyer who'd written a legal memo for them. His name was Paul Clement, and he had basically created this memo telling police officers that, don't worry, you can use this app. It's not illegal. And Peter Thiel, who appeared to be one of their earliest investors, and then trying to just find out the people who worked for the company. And it was so difficult. They did not want to talk to me, even though they had, created this tool that was able to find so much information about people. They wanted to stay in the shadows.
And didn't they start doing something with like your picture and how it started turning up in search results and all that?
Yeah. So when I started investigating them, they actually had this address on their website for their building. And it was just a few blocks away from the New York Times office. So I walked over there and discovered that the address didn't exist. The building wasn't there. I mean, it was that hard to find information about them. So I realized, well, if the company doesn't want to talk to me, I'll try to find police officers who have used the app. And I reached out to quite a few police departments. I eventually was able to talk to a financial crimes detective in Gainesville, Florida. His name was Nick Ferrara. And he just loved the app so much. He said it worked like no facial recognition technology he'd used before, that he had kind of a stack of known criminal offenders, kind of financial fraudsters on his desk. And all the cases were at a dead end. They hadn't had any results in his kind of state facial recognition database. and that he got a free trial of Clearview and just started running these photos through the app and got hit after hit after hit. And I just remember he said, man, they're so great. I'd be their spokesperson if they'd let me. Hmm. And I said, well, I'd love to see how this works. And he said, well, send me your photo and, you know, I'll run your photo and send you the results. I did that. And then he just stopped talking to me. I talked to another officer who, again, sung the company's praises, said he would show me the results. And so I sent him a photo and he said, oh, it's so strange. You actually don't have any results. I see you have a lot of photos on the internet. You should be in the app, but you're not here. And then he stopped talking to me. And so I eventually end up recruiting a detective, a police detective who worked in Texas. This detective agreed to help me investigate Clearview AI. So he went to their website. He requested access to the app, which you could basically get if you had a police email address. And he ran my photo through the app, confirmed there were no results. But then a couple of minutes later, he said he got a call from somebody who worked for Clearview AI, and they wanted to know why he'd been running my photo.
Okay. Sorry, but that's terrifying. Right? This company like disappeared you and then said, no, actually, we're going to reach out and see what's going on here. I mean, come on.
It was really chilling for me because it showed me two things. One, this company, you know, they're not talking to me, but they're tracking who I'm talking to and they're able to see who law enforcement is looking for. But also it showed me they control who can be found. They had decided I shouldn't have any results.
Not to leave you hanging, but we got a couple of things we got to get done. Part two from Kashmir Hill on the other side. Coming up.
Gourmet food, people enjoy it in general.
Well, yes, we do. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 106 today, about 0.3%, closed at 34,517. Did the blue chips. The NASDAQ slid 32 points, about 0.2% there, 13,678. The S&P 500 dipped 9 points, also 0.2%, 44.43. Justin Ho was talking about housing and construction and pipelines and all that. So the big builders, how did they do on Wall Street? Toll Brothers gained 0.1%. Lennar increased 0.2%. D.R. Horton rose 0.4%. Disney plummeted 0.3% today. That is after the company said it plans to invest $60 billion over the next decade in cruise lines, theme parks, and other ventures. Speaking of cruises, Truist upgraded both Carnival and Royal Caribbean. The bank forecast next year and the year after is looking especially strong for the industry. Carnival picked up 0.3%. Royal Caribbean climbed 2.5%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Lately, lots of us are upset about capitalism.
We cannot separate capitalism from racism.
Market capitalism is not a religion. You'd have to be a fool to worship it.
I am so sick of living in a capitalist society.
Blame Capitalism, a series airing Fridays in September on Today Explained.
Everyone's talking about capitalism and they all seem like they're mad.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. When last we heard from Kashmir Hill, whose new book is called Your Face Belongs to Us, she was recounting her journey into what facial recognition really means and her dawning realization that as she was trying to track down Clearview AI, the company was also tracking her. You eventually wound up sitting down with the co-founder of this company, whose name I'm gonna absolutely mispronounce here, but I'll give it a whack. It's Huan Thanh Phat. Does he come off as a supervillain?
So Huan Thanh Phat, it took a while to get his name. He'd been using an alias on LinkedIn. And when I first found out he was tied to the company, I Googled him and just these crazy photos came up. I mean, he had this one photo he'd uploaded to Spotify alongside some of his guitar playing. And he was shirtless, lighting a cigarette and just covered in what looked like blood. And so I didn't know what I was going to get when I met with him. But when I did finally, you know, meet him at a WeWork that the company had rented for the occasion, he looked very much the kind of staid security entrepreneur. He's just wearing, a blue suit, had glasses. It was a very different version of him than I'd been expecting, given what I'd found about him online.
And what does he have to say about, as you said earlier, the ethical line that this company seems to have crossed, not a technological line?
So during that first interview, he seemed to not really have grappled with the ethical line that they had crossed. He really focused on the fact that they were only selling the technology to police departments. I remember this very specific line. He said, this is the best use case for facial recognition technology. It's being used to find pedophiles, not to be used by them to find information on children. And, that is what he told me when I first met him, when I first did that story about Clearview AI. But part of why I wrote this book is a lot of people called me after that story came out and they said, this isn't what this company was first thinking. They wanted to use it for all kinds of different things, like use it at political conferences, have businesses use it. Really, they just evolved into the police use case because those were the easiest customers to get.
Right, right. All right. So look, I want to get to the privacy thing here in a minute, right? Because that obviously is key to this whole thing. But people will be screaming at their radios and or whatever their streaming device is as this interview airs for me to ask you this question. What about the known biases and challenges with facial recognition, right? It does really poorly with Black Americans. It does really poorly on a bunch of different things. How is this possible that this company is allowed to just do this?
This has been one of the biggest and strongest criticisms of facial recognition technology. Tracking the history of it, I saw why. Basically, the people working on this were often white men, and they wanted to make sure that it worked on them and it worked on their friends who were also white men. And those were the photos they used to train the technology. But the vendors did take this criticism to heart, and they have gotten better about training the tech on more diverse faces. And it has improved over time. And so it's not that it's, been eliminated of the handful of people we know to have been wrongfully arrested based on a bad facial recognition match who were arrested for the crime of looking like someone else. In every instance, the person has been Black.
Yeah. Okay, so the follow-up to that one is, where are the regulators? Where's the American government? I'm sure the Europeans are more on this than the Americans are, because that's the way that has turned out to be. But where are the regulators?
At the federal level in the United States, there really hasn't been much done about facial recognition technology yet. And that is in strong contrast to countries outside of the U.S. When Clearview AI's existence became public, privacy regulators in Europe, Canada, Australia, all announced that they were launching investigations into the company. And they have all found that what Clearview AI did was illegal. They said, this violates our privacy laws. You can't put people's photos in your database without their consent.
All right. So look, you don't spend 4 years and however much mental energy you have writing about tech dystopia, as you have done in this book. So the question is, what do you hope people get out of this?
I mean, I want readers to, one, know that these tools are out there, because I don't think that people realize that facial recognition technology has come along as much as it has. And while Clearview AI is limited to police, there are public face search engines. And for people to think about what rules we need to set for how this is used, how police are using it to prevent kind of false arrest.
So let me get you back to where we started, the subtitle of this book, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It. Is that what's on the line here, privacy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that technology like this, if it really becomes ubiquitous, it just changes what it means to be in public. You know, if you go outside in not in your best outfit, or you're making a sensitive purchase at a pharmacy, you kind of do all those things assuming that the people around you won't be able to know who you are. But with a technology like this, somebody could just take a photo of your face, and now they can connect you to that purchase, to that poor fashion choice. And I just think that that could be really chilling just at the day-to-day citizen level, not to mention what could be done with this by companies and governments.
Kashmir Hill is a technology reporter at the New York Times. Her new book is called Your Face Belongs to Us. The subtitle, I think we've gone over a couple of times in this interview. Kashmir, thanks a bunch. I appreciate it. Great book.
Thank you so much, Kai.